Welcome to the Training Design Podcast with me, Sheridan Webb of the Training Designers Club, where we make training design quicker, easier and less stressful for busy L&D professionals. In each episode, I'm joined by a VIP member of the Training Designers Club or a specially invited guest to talk about a specific element of training design that they have expertise in that we can use to improve or refresh our own practice. And today I've got with me Susanna Simmons of Productive IT. And Susanna is a longtime VIP member of the Training Designers Club and is a trainer and facilitator who specializes in systems training, as opposed to being a systems expert who then gets up and trains people. So welcome along, Susanna. Delighted to have you here.
Hi, Sheridan. Thank you so much for having me here today. It's an absolute pleasure. And I love the way that you've introduced me there. Not a systems specialist that trains, but actually a systems trainer. Do you want me to start off with a little bit of background?
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm not wanting to say that you don't know your stuff about systems, because clearly you do. You've got a broader skill set than that.
I think it highlights a good point that you don't need to be an expert in systems and IT to be able to train it. Now, I did start my career as an IT trainer, but actually I'm much more, I suppose, interested and specialize in people and human behavior and psychology and so on. And that is part of what I do. I go by the name of the software adoption doctor, helping people adopt systems, but actually in the context of what that means within their world. For me, it's like any other learning and development is actually what we're trying to establish is a behavior change. And how can we make that change? You know, it's not about what happens in the room, it's what happens after. Yeah. You know, and so that behavior change piece, and any trainer facilitator kind of does that. So yeah, don't shy away from the systems piece and get scared of the technology. That's my advice.
But it can be quite daunting, can't it? Because it's such a, I mean, not just necessarily computer systems. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't want to go off track before we've even started, but I think certainly my kids, you know, we've both got teenage kids. They've grown up with technology. Sometimes I think there's almost an assumption that people can just work it out. So when do you, maybe not now, it's just a question maybe to ask is, you know, when do you need systems training and when don't you need systems training? Because, you know, you don't want to be cracking nuts with sledgehammers, do you? But equally, you don't want to be leaving people really at a loss as to what to do.
It is a great question. I always think about the models that you use and your online courses share, and you talk about sort of the why and the who before you talk about sort of the what and the how. And it is really important, and it's that who piece is very much about understanding kind of who needs to make that change, who needs to be following these new processes, using these new systems, and actually what's the best way for them to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And for some people, actually finding it out for themselves works for them, but other people, they need a bit more sort of support, a little bit more handholding. So you know, this whole stuff about sort of taking in information about how different sort of learning styles and so on, which could be a whole separate conversation, but that, you know, we're not all the same. And so it's about understanding who your audience is. And that for me also brings out another really key point is quite often as training designers, we're contracted in by a key stakeholder. Yeah. You know, and that's our main customer. And this is something I talk about with my software clients all the time, is that's our main customer. They've got their very clear objectives of what they want to achieve, you know, the what's in it for them.
Yeah.
But then our learners, our users are a different set of people. They've got a very different what's in it for them.
Yeah.
And it's about, okay, well, how do we make sure those two things are aligned and what we are designing hits both sets of people, you know, two kind of distinct stakeholder groups. But then also, like we said, within that user base, you've got different personalities, you've got different attitudes towards technology, different ages, so different personality styles and so on. So we have to sort of try and factor all of that in without making it become burdensome and overwhelming and too much work.
Yeah, I guess that must be quite a challenge because, like you say, the people who have perhaps created this software have spent years developing a fantastic product that's got all this functionality and all these whistles and bells that obviously they want people to use because they can see the benefit of it. And then you've got Barbara sat at her terminal who just wants to do what she's always done, the way she's always done it, and can't see any reason because she's already got workarounds to the old system that's perhaps falling over. So I guess it's quite a challenge, isn't it, when people come in and the developers are so excited and the business is so excited, and maybe there's a little bit of resistance amongst the workplace, but equally maybe there's a little bit of a thank goodness we're getting into, 2023.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a few things that you kind of touched on there for me that, so there's almost, generally we're talking about some kind of change, some kind of transformation, and usually there's a pain point where we're addressing some kind of pain point, but actually there's that, is the solution easy enough for someone to switch over? Does it solve the pain easily enough for them to make that change? Or actually, is it easier for them to stick with what they know and stay in the comfort zone? The other thing that kind of jumps out for me is that you talk about Barbara and her being in her world. It highlights that really key point about context.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how good a software product is, if it doesn't work for that person. And so what I mean by that, it can be an award-winning system.
Yeah.
But actually, if it's not integrated well into the processes that your organization is using and the way that the users work, then it will fail as a project. Yeah. And we see it time and time again. And I talk about the difference between deployment. So the sales team have done a really good job of selling this particular solution in. Organization's gone, yeah, let's buy it. You've sold it. They've got access to this system, but it's what happens after that that's really important. And so just rolling it out isn't enough. You've then got to get people using it. But even using it isn't necessarily enough either, because there may be things that people do, and it may be that they do it out of compliance.
Yeah.
Because actually they have to do it, and kind of their performance appraisal and things works, but actually they're still finding those workarounds. Or what you find out is they're still using that spreadsheet in the background because that's what they love and know, but they do the bare minimum in the new system just so that they get that tick in the box. And you don't want compliance, you want commitment. You want people to go, actually, the old way is painful, doesn't work, let's get shot of it. I'm really committed to making this change and using this new system and these new processes, which then moves you sort of to the final step, which is where you get the adoption of actually they can do what they were doing yesterday, and actually they can do it better. But then they start to see, oh yeah, well now I can use the whistles and bells, and I can actually do even more than I could do yesterday. And they're telling everybody, and when they move organization, they take it with them because they go, yeah, not only did we have a good experience and it's a great product, actually I had a great experience personally within my role as whatever that might be. And it means that actually, and one of the mistakes I see people making is focusing on features where in terms of training design, so obviously bringing this back to training design, focusing on features within training design rather than focusing on tasks. So making it about sort of user-centered design. So what is it that they are trying to achieve? What is it that they need to be able to do, rather than, well, the system does this and it was designed to do this, because no matter how you design a system, a user and a customer will use it how they want to use it. And you can walk into an organization and go, why on earth are they using it like that? Because that's how they've decided to do it. And maybe they haven't had the right support to do it a better way.
That is really interesting. I was going to ask you actually what should people not do when they are designing systems training, but I just want to reiterate that point that you made, which I think is so powerful. It's about helping people to do their job, so taking them on a journey. And it's a little bit as well, something else that came to mind was that NLP, I never know if it's a filter or whatever it is, but where we have sameness v difference.
Yeah.
So helping people to find out what's the same or just, you know, very, very slightly different, but they can very much see their old way in this particular aspect of it rather than focusing on what's different, because difference is scary, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So actually saying to somebody, well, this is how you set up a new customer account. This is how you order a new piece of stock, because that's what they need to do, rather than going, and look, you can look up this report and you can do this, that and the other. And they're like, how's that going to help me?
Yeah. And actually what sprang to mind just then is the whole thing about change and attitude to change and the whole sort of threat versus reward piece. And actually that people can be threatened, can't they, with not knowing what's changing and what's staying the same. And like you say, being kind of clearly communicating, well, actually this stuff that you already do, we're not touching that, you know, you can stay in your comfort zone. We're only asking you to make these changes. And also not trying to do everything at once.
Yes.
Well, actually these are the core bits to be able to do what you're doing right now. Start there, get comfortable with that, to then start building on, well, and actually it can do X, Y, Z, and we can make improvements. So also almost that iterative approach rather than kind of big bang, you know, roll out everything all at once and just throw people into a tailspin, really, because they've got no idea and they feel like they've had the rug pulled out from underneath them, because it feels like everything's got to be done differently. Mm-hmm. And you just get resistance then.
Yeah, it's overwhelming, isn't it? I mean, one of my favorite theories that I came across in recent years is David Rock's scarf theory, which is status, certainty, autonomy, relationships and fairness. And you throw in a massive change like this. I mean, I know some businesses will just switch off one system one day and go to a new one the next. It actually attacks every single one of those elements. It's a person who was a really, really good and never made any mistakes, suddenly doesn't know what they're doing. And so that attacks their status. Obviously, it attacks their certainty because they don't know what's going on anymore. Their autonomy, they feel stupid because they're having to ask. It affects their relationships with the people around them and their customers and their suppliers, because they're losing their competence and they don't feel it's fair, because you know, I was doing everything just fine, why have I had to? I feel like I'm being punished. So it can be a lot more disruptive, I think, than perhaps people working in the background ever realize. And I do want to ask you what your top do nots and do's as well with this. I think a lot of the time as well, you keep talking about change, is that obviously developers have been working on this stuff for years. So they are very familiar with it. And all of the anxiety and uncertainty that goes along with change, they experienced that months ago and they're over it. But of course, you roll it out to new people and they're seeing it for the first time. And sometimes the people who are familiar with that product don't necessarily have forgotten what it was like to see it for the first time.
Yep. So true. And I use a very similar model to Scarf. I don't actually use Scarf, but I use a very similar one. And it is really important to remember. So in terms of the don'ts, don't assume and don't forget that you are dealing with human beings.
Yeah.
That are emotional beings. That is so, so key. And you know, and that's partly why I do what I do, because technology is nothing without the people that use it. So to kind of tie in with the software adoption doctor piece, I say it's like, you know, there's no point having medication to help you get better if you don't bother taking it. Well, it's the same with software. You're not going to get the results if you don't start using it. And actually, in order to successfully use it, you need your users on board with it. So yes, that's
so you almost need to sell it to them. You can't just say, oh, it's coming in, deal with it. You do have to go, and this is how it's going to help things be easier for you. This is how it's going to save you time.
Yes.
And really go down to that level.
Yeah, definitely. And there is a lot, I would say, in terms of sort of bringing it back to training design, is you know, that training design sits within a bigger process, and it's almost what are the communications that go around that. And also, people are a lot more, you know, blended learning has been around for a long, long time. Mm. But I don't know about you, Sheridan, but I only really starting to feel that people are actually really kind of getting engaged with that as an option. And I wonder whether the pandemic sort of helped with that a little bit. So people that were really resistant to virtual live and some e-learning elements and so on have actually now started to be a bit more open-minded about it. But a blended learning approach can work really well with systems, because you can start to drip through things, but you can start to get that buy-in, to get that sort of emotional engagement and reduce some of the threat level and the fear for those people that are. But also it gives other people that aren't scared of change and who want to be involved to be those early adopters, to get involved with the process and say, oh, well, actually, I want to put myself forward because I want to have a play with this and I want to learn it for myself. And you can use them to help then in that design process to create something that is really, really useful. And but I want to come back to the point that you made about the developers and the technical people and the subject matter experts, that they know it so well that they forget that other people don't. And so bringing that back right to what you said at the start about sort of not shying away from systems training, actually it can be really helpful if you're not an expert to train, because you have to go through that process yourself. So it's very real actually to go through it and go, oh, well, what about in this situation? And what about in the, because you don't make the assumptions or you don't have that knowledge to kind of just, well, I know that I go here, go there, do this, do that. So I think it can be really beneficial both on a kind of a design process, but also from on an emotional level with the learners, because you can really feel that empathy with them of what they're going through, because you've sort of had to go through it yourself, which is why I train on behalf of my clients. I have to learn their stuff. And so every time I go through that process, if I'm training for them. So yeah, it can be really useful.
I guess as well with what you just said there, I mean, at the start of my career, I had to do some systems training. So I did exactly that. I had to learn the system, and it does provide a little bit of a bridge, I think, between the end users and the IT people who develop it, because as the trainer, you're only, you know, one or two steps ahead of the learners, and you don't know all the intricacies of it. So you can speak the learner's language rather than technical language, which is good.
So, well, let's come back to the do's and don'ts. So what have we got? We've got don't make assumptions, and either don't or do remember that people are human, and that's what we're focused on. Do use task-based objectives, so not feature, so that whole task versus features. And I would say don't try and do everything all at once. So prioritize.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's most, I suppose, almost that kind of must have, nice to have, you know, think about the phased approach. Don't overwhelm people.
Yeah. I think that was the point that I was trying to remember, because if you're learning the system, you don't worry too much about the superfluous and the nice to haves. You say, mm-hmm. No, I want to be able to do this. Don't clutter my brain with stuff I don't need to know. So it does give you as the trainer that very real sense of what's crucial, what everybody does need to know, and then what's nice to know. And I think linking back to what you said about taking that blended approach, I think that's so, I can imagine how powerful that must be when you're doing systems training, because as you say, you do get people who want to learn more, and there can be optional modules, self-guided sessions that they can do. Or if people want to do something again, they can do it again without necessarily holding up the majority. So having that flexibility designed into your program with a very clear core, I would imagine, you know, this is definitely what we need people to do, and everybody has to do this, but you know, you may want to do a lot more than that because you choose to. You may want to repeat some of it because you feel you haven't got the confidence yet, and there may be more than one way. So I'm sure when you're designing systems training, you'll have your, like you say, your e-learning or your videos, you'll have your live sessions, you'll have your cheat sheets, checklists, and all of this sort of thing. So providing lots of different ways for people to access what it is they need to be able to do. So in some ways, it feels like design and systems training is very similar to designing any sort of training, but, you know, maybe there are some different things as well.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we've already touched on, haven't we, around the behavioural change and kind of bearing in mind what we need to be able to support behavioural change, and that applies to systems training. One of the things that's really important, and actually it is important behavioural training as well, but one of the things I think is key is the practice element, giving people the opportunity to practice, and preferably sort of in a safe environment.
Yeah.
So sort of some kind of sandpit type environment, or you know, a pre-production type environment, you know, and it's great if you can do it in a live session and you've actually got someone on hand to be able to support, but you know, that's not always possible. And so being able to do that after the fact, so maybe complete a module, go away, have a play, have a go at doing that, come back, maybe do the next module, is really, really key. Because I suppose in behavioural training, you know, we might do role plays, and a lot of people hate role plays, but you might do a role play in a session and you get a bit of feedback, but actually it's not a live situation, and you go away afterwards and you're obviously encouraged to have a go at doing that. And I think that's one of the challenges with behavioural training, is that you don't necessarily have someone there over your shoulder kind of observing and being able, yeah, to give you the feedback, which is why I think sometimes people find it quite challenging to make those changes, and they just default back. But with systems training, you sometimes you don't have a choice, you've got to make that change, but there's that fear comes in again because people think they're going to break something.
Yes.
Whereas if you give them that safe space to play and go, oh well, actually, what happens if I do this? Oh, the world's not going to end. It's absolutely, yeah, fine. To be able to then go into a live environment feeling that bit more confident, you know, and that's the thing, isn't it? We want to build competence and confidence in any training that we're doing.
I think that's a really good point. And like I say, I mean, as L&D practitioners, we all believe in the value of practice and feedback, no matter what it is we're training. But as you say, particularly with IT, because the fear of what are the implications if I press the wrong button, and if they can see that actually the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to have to input that screen again, which is, you know, annoying, but it doesn't really matter because people are very, very concerned, you know, and I say with generations being a factor as well.
Yeah.
As you were talking, I wonder, I mean, I know I've spoken about it before in previous episodes of the podcast about my husband who's a surgeon. And, you know, yes, obviously they practice what they can, not on live people, but, you know, the reality is that trainee surgeons learn on the job. And I wonder if this is applicable to systems training as well. So they start off, obviously, if I'm a trainee and you're my senior, I would watch you do a procedure and you would be explaining what you're doing. So I would just watch. Then we would perhaps do that again, but you would be asking me, what am I doing and why am I doing it? Mm-hmm. And then it may be, I am going to guide you through every single step of the way. So you're going to do it, but I'm going to tell you. And then it's going to be, then we're going to start chunking it up. So, okay, now I want you to do this bit. Now I want you to do that bit. And then it's the, okay, so what would you do next? So you build that up until obviously the trainee is doing everything under observation from the senior. And I guess that sort of approach works well with IT, doesn't it? As I say, it's about making it manageable.
Yeah. And in an ideal world, you would do that. Unfortunately, in my experience, it's very rare that there is the time and resource to do it to that extent. What I like to do with kind of live training is use that open guided questioning technique, yep, of getting people to think about it. So wherever possible, they've got the system in front of them. So they're not passively sort of watching me demonstrate, they'll have the system in front of them, and then anyway, and they'll obviously have needed to be a bit of context, maybe a bit of information about navigation and those sorts of things, but then you can sort of explore it a little bit of, right, okay, we're trying to achieve this task. So for example, you used an example earlier of adding a new customer account.
Yeah.
Where do you think we're going to go first? And if you've already said, well, there's, you know, a customers section and an orders section and a invoices section or something, they might go, well, customers. Yeah. Okay. So let's click customers. And so they're thinking about it. They're doing it whilst kind of going through that. But then what you can also do is obviously you can have activities and scenarios and things of, right, okay, now have a go in your own of creating a customer account. Or that could be homework if you haven't got time to do it actually in the session, so that then they get that opportunity to sort of practice again on their own. Unfortunately, I get quite frustrated that a lot of organizations now seem to think, oh yeah, well, we've got training videos, we've got a training academy, you know, that's fine. And quite often it's for people that are going to be part of the project team to implement a system, but then that project team then has to translate that into generic system down to custom kind of configuration, how it fits with our organization and so on, and find and providing resources to do that. And quite often I feel there's a gap there because the project team they haven't got training designers, they haven't got people that sort of understand this stuff, that it doesn't necessarily hit the mark that it needs to.
I think what you just said there has really brought home to me when we talked right at the start about you're not a software expert who trains people. And I think when I've seen software training done badly, it's been led by an expert who just shows people and thinks that showing them is enough. Whereas what you've explained there is what we all know, how learning is much more effective if it's active and people need to self-discover. But they need to self-discover safely and with a little bit of guidance and hand-holding. So, you know, as you described there, you know, asking them to suggest what you ought to do, because you're not going to let them go too far wrong. And then when they have a go on themselves, maybe, you know, working in pairs, work it out together.
Yeah.
And what do you think we ought to do? And that just takes the fear away as well, doesn't it? And you've got someone else to go, oh, yeah, I think you're probably right. So, you know, you're not thinking, if I click it, it's all my fault.
What you've just said has made me realize, in terms of your audience and the members of the VIP Training Designers Club, when we talk about people that are sort of working in L&D and doing training design, is that quite often these systems projects sit more with an IT department or maybe a specific department that needs that particular tool. And a change I would love to see in that sense is L&D or HR or whatever that kind of area is called, being brought in as a stakeholder with that and being there to consult and advise and have a part to play of, yeah, okay, the technical people know the technical stuff, but we know people and we know learning and development, we know training. So let us at least consult or advise or help with that piece of that to make that more successful, as you know, get a better return on investment. But also I like the term of user well-being, you know, and well-being is a big topic these days. A new system, a new process shouldn't be stressing employees out. We don't want employees dreading coming to work because they've got this change going on.
Yeah.
I know we want them to be feeling positive. We want them to kind of feel like they are getting better results. You know, it's improving relationships with their colleagues. It's meaningful to them to have this thing going on for them. So having learning and development and HR sort of involved in that and the care of the people, I think is really important.
Because we are so often bought in at the last minute, aren't we?
Mm.
Oh, it's ready to roll out now. Oh, now we'll suddenly think about training people. Whoa! Yeah.
And it really needs to be thought about right from the start, because actually those people should be involved from the start, because then get to that point where you're not making assumptions about how people do things today and what's important to them. and then what will be the priorities for them. And so then you get that clear vision of what the maybe senior leader stakeholders want, because actually quite often it comes down to MI and reporting and so on, but yes, they're only going to get that if everybody else is doing what they need to be doing properly. Otherwise you get rubbish in, rubbish out, and then people go, oh well, that was a waste of time and money. I thought, well, actually, if you put a bit more effort in up front, then you might have had better results.
It's brought to mind, I had a really interesting chat with Jennifer Lindsay Finnan about e-learning, and it's really, really interesting. But you see so many posts on LinkedIn and in the free Facebook group that we've got going on about, oh, I need an LMS, what e-learning system? And it's like, a great system isn't going to transform your people. That is just the platform, that's the tool. And exactly what you say, if we're not using that tool properly, if we're not supporting the people, that's all it's ever going to be. So, you know, software or systems, processes on their own are never going to transform a business, but they can be a very useful part of business transformation if it goes along everything else.
Yeah, exactly. Very definitely.
Well, it feels like we're drawing to a natural close. I've been making notes as we go. I haven't drawn one of my famous mind maps, which I do at all our drop-ins. If I may just reflect back to you what I've picked up from our chat, Susanna, what we're aiming for when we introduce a new system is commitment, not compliance, and commitment that will eventually lead to just seamless adoption. Like, I can't believe we ever did it any other way. We need to put people at the center of the design process, because people aren't predictable. People are emotional. People have invested interests. People want to achieve certain things. So with that in mind, we have to go focus on the task rather than the feature. So what do we need to do, and how can we do that rather than this is what the system allows us to do? You said taking a blended approach is a great route to take with systems training, because we need people to have on-demand resources as well as that in-person guided handholding, and it allows people to work at their own pace to a certain extent as well. Being clear about what the different stakeholders want out of this new piece of software. And for me, one of the key things that stood out was involve users in the design of the training. So get people involved who aren't IT experts, whether that's the L&D team or whether it is a sample of users, and have them look at it very much through their eyes and guide the whole training design process. Anything I've missed or anything you want to add?
I think you've done a fantastic job of summing up what we've just discussed. Yeah. Excellent.
Fantastic. So now people can find you on LinkedIn, obviously. They can find just search Susanna Simmons, and it's with an S, not a Z.
It is. Yeah.
And it's the, so do you want to just tell us where you can find you on your websites and any other socials that you've got going on?
Yep. So the website is productiveit.co.uk, which is like productivity without the Y, just to explain that. So that's my website, and I've got some useful resources on there for people that want to kind of think about the human side of software adoption.
Okay. And I believe you have a book coming out.
I do. The working title at the moment is User Wellbeing, A Silent Killer.
So, oh my goodness me.
Yes. So it's all about the importance of users and thinking about them in that context. So yes, that will be coming out later this year.
Wow. That sounds, I can't remember having seen anything that's even similar to that.
Yeah, just trying to get people to think about things slightly differently when it comes to software adoption.
Fantastic. And I think, you know, just to sort of round off, is that we always use, well, certainly when I was growing up, you know, I'm a middle-aged woman, and IT was something that the geeks did. It was separate to everyday work. Of course, now IT is inherent in every single thing that we do. So many more L&D practitioners are, to a greater or lesser extent, getting involved in software, in systems, in process training design. So it's really important to bear those things in mind. And of course, you know, please do, if you're listening to this and you want to contact Susanna, she is very, very welcoming. She's very responsive. And she is a member of our VIP community, where we meet on a regular basis to help each other out with all different areas of training design.
Yeah. And I have to say, I'm going to give it a little bit of a plug as well, because it is fantastic. It's been invaluable to me as a solo business owner to be able to use the drop-ins and things and the resources to either get unstuck or just get a different perspective on things. And what we've just been saying about all users are different. And yeah. It's always good to have that input from other people, because they'll see things from a slightly different angle. So yeah, if you haven't checked out the VIP Training Designers Club, check it out, definitely.
Oh, thanks very much, Susanna. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and some really interesting points and just demystifying the whole systems training. And good luck with your book.
Thank you very much, Sheridan.
Okay, thanks, Susanna.